Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Talk.
Street Talk.
Mike Graham.
Fighting the good fight with all his might. Providing a welcome dose of common sense for the common people.
Solid Talk.
Hot Talk.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
See it, hear it, think it. Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. It is a not quite glorious Tuesday, but, you know, we managed to get through Monday without falling over. We managed to get past the lowest of the low when it comes to the pound against the dollar. It's back up at 108, apparently, today. There's a lot of doom and gloom out there. There is plenty to be worried about, but nothing to be completely and utterly terrified about. I hear that word a lot these days. We're terrified about what's going on. There is a bad knock-on effect on mortgages, and some mortgage lenders are not lending any money to people because it's so uncertain out there in terms of what's going on with the bond market, with the money markets. There's an awful lot of competition going on. The Daily Mail has picked up on what we were saying yesterday, which is basically that the City Boys are completely and utterly ripping the backside out of the economy because this is where they make their money. This is what they do, right? So an awful lot of what is going on is being driven by the speculators, and that happens in every single area. And if the oil companies say they're going to have to put the price of oil up because oil is counted in dollars, not in pounds, they're lying to you, because guess what they do? They hedge their bets. They do deals with currency dealers so that if the pound and the dollar do change rates, they're covered. So they don't need to put their prices up because they've already hedged that particular situation. So everybody's taking the mickey, for want of a better phrase. I'd like to say the other phrase, but I can't because I'm not allowed by Ofcom. But here's the thing. We are not in a catastrophe. The economy will recover. Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng are praying right now on their knees in Downing Street that it doesn't get any worse because they don't really know what to do. Claire Fox is here. She's going to tell us what she makes of it all. We'll talk to her as well about what's going on in Italy, how the European Union are reflecting on a new right-wing government in Italy that might actually not be terribly good for their proposals and for their whole programme. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk, of course, about an encounter that I had on the streets of London yesterday with a skateboarder. Yeah, they're just as bad as the cyclists. Apparently they think they own the pavement, which is not the case at all. We're also going to talk about Keir Starmer. He's making his keynote speech to the Labour Party conference today, at which presumably he's going to set out his plan to be Prime Minister. A lot of Labour politicians this week are saying, when we're in government, as if it's already a done deal. Well, guess what? It isn't. 2 years at least until an election, unless things go catastrophically wrong for the Tories. And I don't think Labour are ready. I don't think Keir Starmer would ever make a decent Prime Minister, but I'll take your view on that. We'll talk to John McTiernan, who used to work for Tony Blair, who knows a thing or two about Labour politics. 0344 499 1000 is the number. This is, of course, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. It's where you get the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Let's get it on. Now, there was a time when interest rates were very, very low indeed. Do you remember that? Yeah, for most of your lives probably, right? But there was also a time back in the dim and distant past when I was younger when interest rates were as high as 15% and people couldn't afford to pay their mortgages. Here's what the headline says this morning. Mortgage mayhem. 10 banks pull house loans from sale in panic over the plunging pound. Rightmove has warned that an average first-time buyer now faces a £1,100 a month mortgage payment to pay for their home. So that is serious money, and that is a serious story. Let's talk to Baroness Claire Fox. Claire, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
director of the Academy of Ideas. You're going to need a lot of ideas to get us out of this one, aren't you?
I'm not suggesting that I have the ideas to get out of it. But just on your point about mortgage rates, I think that's this is the kind of effect of what the budget has done, which really are going to hurt people. Because it is true, I didn't buy a house until very old because I was scared of interest rates.
Yeah.
And when I tell people that now, they don't understand because they say, what interest rates?
Yeah.
But actually, that's what would always cripple you. So it's been relatively cheap once you get over the hurdle of buying the house to pay the mortgage off. This will absolutely lead to people losing their homes.
It will.
A massive hike.
And as you say, people who have had for the last 10 or 20 years a relatively kind of easy time of it in terms of interest rates because they haven't really gone anywhere. They've been kept, I think, artificially low because they should have been higher than they were. They have no way of dealing with this, either psychologically or monetarily.
And it also means that if you borrow money, which means that all the talk about growth and investment, and it doesn't just mean that the government can't borrow money, but if you're trying to say, okay, I'll take Liz Truss and Kwarteng's words, there's no regulations, I'm going to invest in a local area, I'm going to go to the bank and get some money to really expand the business I run, and then you go, oh, interest rates, paying it back, no chance.
But that's the other thing, that all of these geniuses who you hear on various television and radio shows talking about what needs to be done and surely somebody should step in and we should do, you might not remember it, I'm sure you do though, the exchange rate mechanism interference, which went horribly wrong back in the day. You've also got the situation where they're all saying, well, the Bank of England surely must intervene. Well, if the Bank of England intervenes, the interest rates go up even more and your mortgage goes up even more.
I don't think it's the Bank of England. I mean, my critique of what Truss and Kwarteng have done is that I want to emphasise that they are, for the first time, talking sense about growth. It's very important that people recognise that we've actually been through an ideological commitment against growth for a decade or so. A lot of people saying, we don't want to grow the economy, it's bad for the environment, we've got too much consumerism.
And that's a very important part of it, really, isn't it?
So they rhetorically, at least, I really go with their idea that the whole Labour Party critique has always been about redistribution of a preset size cake, that's the way they describe it, and what you need is a bigger cake. So I've been arguing for economic growth for a long time. That's what I think is necessary. The problem is I do not think unfunded tax cuts guarantees that economic growth, because that presupposes that there's a capitalist class just waiting, chomping at the bit to take risks and go out there and invest and be innovative and have huge new daring projects that will make the economy grow. And actually, we've got a really risk-averse, you know, sort of, I mean, we know from this programme, a lot of them are quite woke. A lot of them are bought into environmentalism. They don't actually necessarily want to take the risk. There's no real appetite for that. So they've removed the barriers for growth. But say they don't happen. Say those people don't invest.
Well, at the same time,
so that's the massive gamble. And I think they needed to be more, there needed to be more direction and more link between them saying, we want investment, we want a group of people to invest, say, in this big industry. We need you to go into this and then we'll give you massive incentives.
But an awful lot of what's going on at the moment isn't actually the fault of Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng. I mean, an awful lot of the problems in the money markets is caused by the strong dollar, partly because they put their interest rates up and people are putting their investment money over there. The pound, like every other currency, is down against the dollar. The yen was down against the dollar and the Japanese bank, central bank, put their interest rates up to stop the free fall.
I'm with you on saying that, you know, a panic in the markets is not to say that the policy is wrong. And by the way, I think it's ironic that a lot of people are saying this proves the policy's wrong, because I actually always said, and it would have been true, that if, for example, Corbyn had got in, then the markets would have reacted. And in fact, the markets could easily have reacted to Brexit. Initially, they did. I mean, it doesn't mean the policy's wrong just because the markets react. I don't trust, in that sense, the markets as telling you whether a policy is good or bad. What I'm saying is more fundamental, that I don't believe that their policy plan, which is that you remove all restrictions and have massive tax cuts, and that spontaneously leads to growth or investment, I'm saying that's the blip for me.
But
so they've got to fund this through growth, but I can't see any evidence that what they've done is going to lead to that economic growth.
I totally get that, but we're dealing with two different things here. And the thing that worries me about the way that we cover stories now in this country is it's a 24-hour cycle, you know, and I blame many of my colleagues in the media for this as well as I do politicians, because politicians know what they're talking about mostly, although I, with one or two notable exceptions, which you won't mention. But the point is that it's wrong to conflate the two things. You can have a go at the Tories for having a bad plan and not working it through and not thinking it through and not funding it properly. And you can talk about the markets, but you can't say the Tories are to blame for the markets, because the markets are literally out of control most of the time. And they're run by some very clever people, rocket scientists, they used to call them. I mean, I used to get a call when my sister was in the day-to-day running of things like Swiss bank accounts and stuff like that. You know, the market rumour would start that John Major was dead. And then suddenly somebody would be making a load of money on the fact that somebody would be selling the pound. And then she would call me and go, is this true? I'm like, no, it's not true. And then they go back the other way and they make some money on the way up and on the way down. And that's how it works.
I agree. But I think that that's one of the problems is that the British economy is depended too much on the financialisation of capital. You know, in many ways, that whole system of financial affairs and hedge funds. I'm not saying it's immoral or anything, but that's where the activity's been happening.
But the world is in that place. I mean, the oil market is the same. You know, the energy markets are the same. There's speculators everywhere.
But one of the problems that we've got is that the real economy, if you want, is affected by that speculative run on things like the pound.
Absolutely.
But it's also the case that you do need to see some activity on the real economy. And although I think it was really positive, for example, that we had the discussion about new energy sources like fracking.
Yes.
And it was interesting yesterday that Rachel Reeves, in what was considered to be a good speech at Labour Party conference, steady as it goes, you know, Labour Party looking fiscally responsible, made a big play and got the loudest cheer for saying fracking won't happen on our watch. And their whole their economic growth plan is entirely prescribed by green growth.
Yeah, and that's
so
ideology.
They won't go beyond, that's ideological, right? And it's restrictive. Mm. But the difficulty I've got is Rees-Mogg can say, we're going to have fracking. Mm. But where is the actual genuine Tory plan? This is, they're in government, the government plan to actually now exploit, for example, every single aspect of fossil fuel to bring down the energy prices. See, we haven't seen that bit of it.
No.
They've removed restrictions and then they sit there and hope something happens.
Yeah.
But I think they've got to be more proactive in making that investment occur. That's my concern.
Yeah. But our politicians have been woeful, haven't they, over the past sort of two decades in terms of planning anything. I mean, you know, we heard all about the Tony Blair revolution, and we'll be talking to John McTiernan later on in the show about what New Labour did to sort of revolutionise and modernise the British economy, which up to a point they did, but then they also did some terribly bad things. But what they didn't do was look ahead to the energy possibilities, and they didn't build nuclear power, and people like Nick Clegg didn't want them to build nuclear power. And so here we are, we find ourselves looking out the window going, oh, I didn't know it was going to be light today. I didn't know the sun was going to come up. Well, you knew the sun was going to come up every day for 20 years. Why didn't you do something?
But short-termism has affected everyone. It's affected a lot of people in the corporate sector as well. And this risk aversion, I can't emphasise enough, risk aversion is a real problem. But it used to be the case that people thought, I will make a fortune, or big companies would make a fortune, because they'd take bets, they'd take risks. They'd say, well, maybe we'll invest in this and it might not pay off. Maybe we'll invest in this and in the long term we're going to get a result from it, but we might not. And that's what, for example, if you're going to invest in fracking, you say, well, we don't know what's going to happen, but we're going to take a bet on it, right? You now hear investors and big corporates saying there's no guaranteed profit in it. And you think, well, you know, we live under capitalism. There's no guaranteed profit. That's like people who say, I want to have a bet in a betting shop and say, I need to know the horse is going to win. No.
That's not how it works.
That's not how it works.
No, exactly.
But the fact that we've lost that appetite for taking risk, which obviously can have great gains but can mean losses, means that everybody's sitting tight. And we do know that there's actually been a fair amount of money sloshing around in the last few years. It hasn't been invested productively.
No.
And what I'm saying is there's a productivity crisis that I'm afraid I don't see the government tackling. I don't see Labour tackling it either. Mm. And as you say, the problem is we have the conversations about the wrong things, which is a kind of panic reaction to the pound.
Exactly. We lurch from one to another.
Yeah,
stay where you are, Clegg. We've got a lot to talk about. We've got Labour to talk about, Keir Starmer to talk about, and the Italian election and the EU as well. This is Talk TV.
Nationwide, by your side, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. It's a big day for the Labour Party here because, of course, they show in a new YouGov poll a 17-point lead. I think it's the biggest lead they've ever had since Keir Starmer's been leader. He's also making his speech this afternoon to the Labour Party conference in Liverpool. You'll hear that right here, of course, on Talk TV. Claire Fox is here with me. I'm not over-egging this, am I, to say that this could be a big moment for Sir Keir Starmer, because he's generally looked upon as a bit of a plodder, not particularly interesting, not particularly charismatic, pretty dull. I can't see his speech getting any better this afternoon from what it would normally be.
No, it's not the speech. It's the context in which the speech is happening, which is last week there was real terror about the energy crisis and the cost of living crisis. That feels like ages away now because now everybody's thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to lose my house because of the mortgage.
Yeah. But we've had a whole year of this, haven't we? We've had the droughts that we're going to kill off every single piece of vegetation in this country.
I know, crisis to crisis, lurching from crisis to crisis. Some of them real, some of them not real. All I'm saying is that Keir Starmer is speaking, and he can speak in a calming way because that's his sort of style.
Well,
he
could say
not really passionate, yeah. But the point is, if people are looking for steady as it goes, as it were, that can be an appeal, can't it? I think one of the difficulties that we've got at the moment is, and Liz Truss has really genuinely got this problem, which is that these radical policies that she's brought in, and they are radical, and she's obviously a conviction politician. She's decided to go with what she believes. The difficulty is, when I say as a Democrat, you know, these are elected politicians, they haven't been tested out exactly with the electorate, right? So you're basically kind of slightly speculating as to whether the electorate would ever go with them, right? Because they're very different to Boris Johnson.
Yes.
And it does make me laugh, because people did used to say, Boris Johnson is a right-wing Thatcherite free marketeer.
Right.
And everybody say, no, he isn't. And then they get Liz Truss in and they go, oh, maybe Boris Johnson was a centrist after all, right?
Well,
because
actually
he was dull on the economy.
No surprise. No surprise that when Kwasi Kwarteng was doing his budget speech on Friday, there was a lot of quiet people on the back benches because they were all Rishi Sunak supporters, Boris Johnson supporters possibly, and even some Boris haters.
Yeah.
But they'd never seen anything like this before.
No, exactly. So, but I think that where we've got to hold both parties to scrutiny is that whilst, you know, you can sort of defend the government attempting to do something about economic growth, there are going to be rows about the immigration issue.
Yeah.
There are going to be rows about the fact that actually they haven't really opened up fossil fuel. And if you look at some of the appointments, you think, oh, quite a lot of environmentalists are doing rather well in Liz Truss's government. Some of the important issues around identity politics and so on have not been tackled. Where's the government's intervention on Leicester? What have they said about the PayPal controversy?
Yeah.
Senior Tories have. They haven't in terms of free speech.
Mm.
But with the Labour Party, equally, he might give a calming speech today and he might be up in the polls. And I think that with people worried about their mortgages and interest rates and so on, he could actually have a serious bounce and be taken very seriously.
Well, it would be amazing if he didn't have a bounce, wouldn't it?
And we've always, I think a lot of people have been surprised at how low they've been when the Tories have been in mayhem for so long. But the Labour Party have also got to own up to the fact that they're not going to invest in reliable energy sources, only green energy sources. They've got massive problems in relation to identity politics in terms of basically being on the wrong side, in my view, on a lot of culture wars issues.
Well, let's not forget, it took the England women's football team to win the Euros before Keir Starmer even could say what a woman was. He was able to identify his daughter as a woman.
But it's also, you know, secretly behind the scenes at Labour Party conference, there's been a secret meeting of a women's rights group.
I mean,
you couldn't make
it up. Secret meeting.
Secret, in as much as it wasn't officially on the programme, in which a range of women politicians, very, took it upon themselves to organise and have the kind of discussions that should be happening on conference floor in relation to women. And you actually had a situation where one MP stood up, Rosie, who I can't remember her surname suddenly.
Yeah, I know.
The MP who has been very brave in relation to the
Rosie
Duffield in relation to trans rights, and she said she would not support Eddie Izzard standing on a women's only shortlist, which you would think was kind of part of a comedy routine if
you
it weren't a serious proposal. And when she said that, she's being given plaudits by somebody. But the fact, what I'm saying is, that's having to go on in secret at a Labour Party conference. And people will say, oh, well, you're just trying to raise the culture wars issues. Claire, because you're distracting from the economy. But the truth is that the Labour Party is riven with a lot of disputes about these issues.
Ordinary voters care about the cost of living. They care about getting cheap energy. They care about having money to spend. They care about mortgages. They care about, you know, their families and putting food on the table. They don't care about Eddie Izzard, whether he stands as a bloke
or as a she. Do. They slightly care about the fact that they feel that some of the new orthodoxies that have come on are completely at odds with their values.
Yeah.
Because although it's true that the economy matters, it's the economy stupid, we know from everything from Brexit to, in fact, what's happening in Italy, which you mentioned, or what happened with Sweden, that people vote for values
too. Sure.
They sometimes say, we'll take an economic hit if you take our ideas seriously, if you take notice of what we're saying about taking back control, for example. So I think Labour always underestimate that. I mean, it's not just the economy stupid. There's more to politics than
about immigration massively.
Yeah.
And hardly any politicians want to talk about it. The only time the Tories now want to talk about it is about bringing more immigration in.
There's a big argument to be had about immigration, but you've also got things like the police. You know, people do care about whether the police are taking the knee or not. Mm. They do care about the fact that they can't get them to, come round when you've had a break-in, but that they'll arrest somebody for something they tweeted. These issues aren't just superficial or silly issues. I think that voters instinctively understand that they're being treated as mugs, right? So they don't want to suffer economically, but they do not want the values which they hold dear to be completely undermined by people who describe them as racist or far right or backward for saying, for example, I happen to believe in the family, or I think that a woman is biologically different from a man, and I can't see why you are introducing into schools any confusion around those issues.
Yeah, no, sure. When I said
so, the Labour Party will not want to talk about those issues, and they have to. Mm. But as it happens, Liz Truss also has to tackle them, not in an opportunistic way, but she's not quite done what I was hoping on some of the statements around those issues as well.
Well, she's only been in 3 weeks as well, so there is, I mean, she has been hobbled. I mean, I did say when she got the job, I'm like, this is not a job you should want, because it's going to go pretty badly wrong before it goes anywhere good. Let's just finish up with a bit on Giorgia Meloni and the win in Italy for the Italian band of brothers, as I keep calling them, the Italian Brotherhood or whatever it's called. There's been interesting noises made by Ursula von der Leyen over in Brussels about how they've got machinery or something like
that—a toolbox,
a toolbox to deal with things that they might not like happening in Italy. It's like, sorry, what you mean the elected government?
But I think that I'm not somebody who's kind of like going around sharing the Meloni speech and saying, "Isn't she marvellous?" Mm. And there's social conservatism can come over as being quite looking to the past and some glorious age and so on. And there's definitely a dodgy side to this new organisation that's emerged. But, hugely important, this is the first democratically elected prime minister in Italy for 14 years.
And the first woman.
First woman, but democratically elected seems important to me. So Italy has suffered from a range of technocratic interventions where prime ministers have been put in place with cobbled together by the Italian elite and the EU imposed on the Italian people. So I think this is a real reaction. Yeah. I think you have to respect it. I also think that all of the kind of their far right, their fascist stuff is a way of just undermining a democratic decision. Mm. And Ursula von der Leyen's intervention is one of the reasons why Meloni has won, it seems to me, because you can't have Ursula, an unelected... I mean, you know, when we're talking about, you know, people say about fascism, scary stuff and all this sort of thing. Well, do you know what? Unelected German politicians who run a super state.
Yeah, with a lot of flags around them.
Who then tell the Italian people that they've got it wrong in an election.
Yeah.
That scares the hell out of me, me tell you.
Absolutely. We've got to run. Claire Fox, great to see you. It's Academy of Ideas, big meeting coming up October.
Festival, 15th, 16th of October. Even stars Mike, but 400 of the speakers too.
There we go. Don't miss it. This is Talk TV. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Coming up, we're going to talk some more about the situation out there in the economy, of course. Julian Jessop is going to be with us shortly. We'll talk about the mortgages and the problem with banks lending money right now, because the markets, of course, are having a bit of a mayhem week, it has to be said. But how about this from Gina Maria? She says, my blood pressure has dropped listening to Mike and Baroness Fox. It's such a treat to listen to common sense and positivity on steroids. Many thanks. You are dead right that governments have been focusing on ridiculous ideas ideologies instead of getting on with the job. I truly believe that this is why the world is in the mess that it's in addition to lockdowns and Russia. And Starmer, in an interview, says Ash of Manx in Lancashire, in an interview as he entered the conference, critical the government was making millionaires richer and the working class poorer. I was screaming at the TV, "You are a millionaire, elite from London, you won't give back or to charity. What are you going to receive from it?" He is Tory in disguise, like Tony Blair was, says Ash. Well, I think that's the problem Keir Starmer's got. He's very wealthy. He's part of this sort of Labour North London elite. Liz Truss famously said to him in the only PMQs we've actually seen since she became Prime Minister that not only can the Labour Party not seemingly find a leader from the female fraternity, a woman, in other words, they can't seem to find a leader from outside of North London. Let's talk to Jackie in Manchester. Hello, Jackie.
Good morning, mate.
How are you doing?
I'm a bit annoyed, to be honest.
Are you?
With what's going on, yeah. I've got a fixed-rate mortgage that was fixed at 0.2%.
Yes.
The predictions for next year, because of the borrowing and the increased interest on the debt, the government debt, they're predicting 6% next year.
Yeah.
Now, with the cost of living crisis, that is equivalent to 14% in the 1970s.
Yes.
And I don't know what I'm going to do.
Have you got a mortgage currently, Jackie?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And, I mean, has it gone up already since what has happened over the past couple of days?
Well, I'm on a fixed rate.
Okay.
Till October.
What, this, or until next month?
No, next October.
Okay, all right.
Next year, it's predicted at 6%, and there's no way that I can go from 0.2% up to 6%.
Right.
It's just not going to happen.
Right.
Now, what I don't understand, Mike, is that, yes, I understand Liz Truss was going for growth, but to borrow another $150
billion
for this, it has spooked the markets.
Yes, because but the markets, but the problem with the interest rate, Jackie, and I'm going to talk to Julian Jessel, I'll try and get an answer for you on it as well, so thanks for letting us know. Jackie, one of many people who will say, look, if it does go up to 6%, I won't be able to afford my mortgage. And that's an absolute truism. Whether it does go that far up is unclear at the moment, but certainly one of the reasons why the markets are tanking at the moment is because of the strength of the dollar. It's not necessarily to do with confidence in the British fiscal policy that's just been announced by Kwasi Kwarteng on Friday. Let's talk to Julian, independent statistician fellow at the IEA. Julian, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. I mean, Jackie will be one of many people calling this show today and maybe other shows to talk about how worried they are about the interest rates. My view of all of this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that an awful lot of this is being driven by the US dollar. A lot of it's being driven by things that are happening outside of this country rather than things that are happening inside of this country. Interest rates for me have been, you know, wrongly very, very low for far too long. And this is the consequence of it. And everybody who says that they want to bring inflation down wants to put the rates up even higher.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to unpick there. First of all, I'm very sympathetic to what Jackie says. And, you know, higher interest rates on top of all the other pressures on household budgets are certainly something to worry about. Mm. Hopefully, though, I can provide a little bit of reassurance. I don't actually think interest rates will go anywhere near as high as 6%. Mm. I think the new normal now is probably somewhere between 4 and 5%. In practice, I think rates will probably peak at around about 4. And that's partly because the economy is now much more sensitive to higher interest rates because of the higher levels of debt, not just mortgage debt, but also corporate debt. So yes, interest rates are rising, but I don't think they'll rise as far as some people are suggesting. I also think to some extent, we have to have higher interest rates.
Yeah.
I think the idea that you could bank on interest rates remaining as low as close to zero, 0.2%, for the foreseeable future was always unrealistic. I think interest rates need to return to something more like normal levels. And that will involve trade-offs. I mean, the alternative would be, yes, if we were still stuck in a deep recession, then interest rates wouldn't have to go up. Or if we weren't worried about inflation, then interest rates wouldn't have to go up. But I think the reality is interest rates have to get back to something like more normal levels.
Yeah.
But I recognise it's going to be very painful for people like Jackie.
Well, it will be. But I mean, again, it's artificial to leave the rates at that sort of level. People have borrowed more money probably than they should have. People are in a lot more debt perhaps than they were in the 80s and 90s, because then perhaps the mortgage was the biggest debt that they had. Now people are buying cars that they can't really afford to buy, but they want a nicer car. They're buying new kitchens that they can't really afford to buy. I mean, we've seen an incredible kind of outlay of money spending since the pandemic, because people supposedly saved money by not going to work and all of this. So, you know, without, you know, blaming everything on the government, I think you can take a slightly different view and say, you know, we have got to a place in our society where people expect to be able to have more stuff, and they borrowed money quite happily to get that stuff.
Well, thinking about the bigger picture, I think we've had the balance of policy wrong for a while. So fiscal policy has been too tight. So I think Rishi Sunak was wrong to raise taxes as he was planning to do. So I think it is right to cut taxes. But equally, we've had a very long period of exceptionally low interest rates, which are bad for financial stability. They do encourage people to take on too much debt and to spend too much. So we do need an adjustment here. I recognise it's going to be very painful, but I think we have to look at everything that's happening in the round. So, you know, taxes are being cut. The government is spending a lot of money subsidising energy bills. There are lots of, you know, positives that are happening as well. And I think if we look at everything that's going on, we will end up with a stronger, healthier economy as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you see stories about Halifax, Virgin Money, Skipton, amongst some of the big lenders who are literally pulling mortgage deals and saying to first-time buyers, sorry, we're not going to lend you any money, I mean, that's a pretty desperate situation for a lot of people.
Yes, I think actually to some extent that is unnecessary. I'm a big fan of the overall strategy that the new government is adopting. So I'm firmly signed up to Truss and Oaks. But I think there were a couple of tactical mistakes. One is announcing the cuts in income tax well before you had to. The cuts aren't going to take place until next year anyway. So why not wait a little bit longer? And the other was that Kwasi Kwarteng was still, you know, talking aggressively about further tax cuts over the weekend, which sort of, you know, sent a message to the markets he's willing to double down. So I think there is a bit more turmoil than we needed, but equally I think it will pass quite quickly. I think that what the mortgage providers are doing is basically repricing their mortgage offers in order to allow for the increase in market rates that we've seen over the last couple of days. And today, at least, actually, the pound has calmed down a little bit. You know, bond yields have stabilised. And so hopefully this is just a sort of a few days of panic rather than something more serious.
Yes, I think panic is definitely in the air, but it's never a good thing. And it's always worth taking stock, I think, of what's going on around it. Julian, appreciate your time. Thank you very much indeed. Julian Jessop, fellow at the IE. A independent statistician, of course, as well. There is a sort of panic in the air, but an awful lot of it's stoked up by my colleagues in the media, who seem to want to have one catastrophe and another catastrophe following straight after it. It doesn't actually matter what is going on in the markets, but it's what the result of that is, like it is in the various building societies and banks, who are now saying, oh, we can't lend you any money. I mean, the banks are a disgrace. They always have been. You know, they make mints of money whenever they feel like it, and then they stop lending whenever they think there might be a bit of a risk. Well, you know, that's not good enough. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, I'll tell you a story about a cyclist, a skateboarder, and me. This is Talk TV.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
It is, of course, Talk TV. I'm Mike Graham, with you all the way through until 1 o'clock, when Ian Collins will be here. Mike says, Frank in Bromley, no matter how attractive the Tories make the UK for investment, would you invest with Labour 17 points ahead? Well, I'll talk to you later on about the YouGov poll, which has got Labour 17 points ahead, because I don't think it matters. You know, don't forget all of the things that we were told that were going to happen this year, including the fact that we were going to have to pay £3,500 for our electricity bills. That's turned out not to be true, because the government has sorted that out. We've also found out that we aren't, in fact, burning up. I actually heard somebody refer to wildfires around London. Do you remember that? Just before the cold weather kicked in, and just before my grass went all green again because of all the rain that we've had for the past few days and the past month, we were told, oh no, it's going to be a nightmare. The earth is heating up. Global warming is causing wildfires all around London. Do you remember that? We had a couple of weeks of quite hot weather, and then we went back to normal. So we didn't have a catastrophe there either. We were told we were going to run out of all sorts of things. We were going to run out of petrol. We were going to run out of oil. We were going to run out of gas. We were going to run out of food. None of this stuff has ever happened, right? The Labour Party, 17 points ahead, ready for government. That's not going to happen either, because we're 2 years away from an election, right? And it doesn't look to me as though Keir Starmer is anywhere near ready for prime time. But before we go to the phones, let me tell you a little story about what happened to me last night. I came back into the work to do the talk, which goes out from this very building, Talk Towers, from 9 o'clock at night. So I did my usual. I drove into my local car park, and as I was about to turn left, as I was indicating left to go into it's a one-way street into the car park, I suddenly spotted a cyclist who was coming on the inside left of my car as I was turning, trying to go past me at high speed. He realised that he was about to hit me, so he managed to swerve around me, and he sort of half fell off his bike and did one of those stupid staggering things where cyclists put their feet on the floor and kind of go like that. And then somehow he didn't fall over, unfortunately. Then, of course, did the usual cycling trick of snarling at me and sticking his middle finger up and before shouting something about why I watched where I was going. I'm afraid I had to retort that he shouldn't have been trying to overtake me on the inside, first of all. And the fact is that he shouldn't even have been ignoring the fact that I was turning left. And otherwise, he might have been killed. There was a bit of an exchange. He cycled off, as I always do. Anyway, after that, parked the car, started walking into work, and on the pavement where I was walking, it's in a sort of pedestrianised area near a hospital, and it says that cyclists should dismount, generally speaking. I was vaguely aware of a sort of a noise behind me. It sounded a bit like a skateboard, so I didn't think anything of it. Next thing I know, this character on a skateboard squeezes past me. I'm walking next to a wall. He actually brushed past me physically, right, on the inside. I said, "Did you have to do that?" He said there was no other way to get around you. And I'm like, this is a pavement. The road is there. There's no cars in it. You should be on your skateboard there. Grown man on a skateboard says, "Well, you should have got out of my way." I'm like, mate, you might as well be on a toy tricycle, because a skateboard is a toy. It is not a means of transport. What is wrong with these people? They think they own the pavement now as well as the road. So all I can say to you is it's getting worse, and we need to do something about it. And I also passed, by the way, an electric scooter, which was left lying on the ground, as they do, with a registration plate on it. So you can put registration plates on scooters. Let's put them on bicycles as well. And if you're on a skateboard, you should have a big sign on your back telling me who you are. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Let's talk to Pat in Suffolk. Hello, Pat.
Good morning, Mike. Yeah, I don't know if it's just this country or in other countries, but we seem to have got into what I call short-termism. I don't know if it's a word or what, but everything seems to be today. If it's not sorted out today, oh, we're in problems. I mean, I'm just looking here at the fuel prices back, what was it, many years ago?
Yes.
About 6 months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Less than a year. £2.50 one garage was charging.
Yeah, I remember that.
People like Starmer and all the lefties and all the old doom mongers, like you're saying, you know, oh God, we're going to fry, we're going to do this, were demanding the government do something about it. Now looking at prices today, and average prices is £1.
I've seen £1.59 is the lowest I've seen.
Something like that, yeah. I've got the wrong mug. I clicked on the wrong map, you know. So, you know, why is it, you know, it's like the gas and everything else. Yes, we are having problems with gas, and of course because of Russia and everything else. But we should have sorted that out years ago, but that's another matter.
We should have done. But this is the problem, though. This is the problem, Pat.
And everything tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, or today. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I think is because we now sit in our nice comfy chairs in front of our 70-foot LCD TVs or whatever, and phone up and get a burger delivered and in 15 minutes.
I know. It is a ridiculous society that we now live in compared to what we lived in before. Pat, listen, I've got to run, but thanks for your call. We've got to talk to Peter Carr, Labour MP for Hove, Shadow Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. He's up at the Labour Party conference, of course, today in Liverpool. Peter, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you. It's really good to be with you.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining us. Obviously, you're here to talk about Northern Ireland, but before we do that, let's just talk about Keir Starmer. He's got a speech coming up this afternoon, quite an important speech, you might say. This is his kind of opportunity to prove to the world, and perhaps to Britain anyway, that he's worthy of being the next Prime Minister of this country. How's he going to do that?
Well, we're going to hear the speech in a short time, just a couple of hours now. So, you know, he'll be able to prove with his words and his actions and the reaction that he'll get from the hall then. But when you say how's he going to do it, we're 17 points ahead in the polls today, but not just the overall polls. Overall, Keir Starmer is seen as a better Prime Minister in the polls than Liz Truss and Boris Johnson. We're ahead on security, keeping our communities safe, on the economy, but also on law and order and investing and running our public services. So it's not just that the Labour Party is doing well in one or two areas, or not just doing well overall. The Labour Party is earning the trust across the spectrum of policies. We're shouldering the weight of being a government in waiting. That's the Labour Party going into this speech today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And what you're going to see from Keir is giving a bit more focus to that and a bit more direction to that, and he'll be spelling out our vision for a better Britain going forward. And I believe, he believes, we believe in the Labour Party that it is a vision of a better Britain that is rooted in the mainstream aspirations of where the country is. The Tory party right now, particularly last Friday, leapt away from the centre ground of politics. It deserted most people in this country. The Labour Party is now shouldering a bigger load as a result because we are the only party that is in the centre ground of British politics. But you will see we're responding with sensible, implementable, bold policies that match the scale of the challenge but are also very, very sensible.
Well, I mean, the trouble with not being in government is you are a government in waiting, possibly, or you may just be in waiting. Neil Kinnock thought he was government in waiting, and then he didn't win the election. The bottom line is you have to actually win an election to be in government. And if you weren't leading in the polls against the Tory party, which has just been through possibly one of the most difficult periods in the history of any government, and with some of the mistakes that they made, I'd be very surprised. But I don't agree that the Tories deserted the people. They've given a load of people a tax cut, which many people will think is a good thing. The fact is that it's now gone horribly wrong because the American US dollar is very, very, is riding very high, and every currency around the world is down against the dollar. The euro has gone below parity. Nobody's talked about that. The yen was so weak that the Japanese central bank had to put their interest rates up. So, you know, it's not simply a problem that Liz Truss has created, or that Kwasi Kwarteng has created. It's a problem around the world at the moment. But I take your point that the Tories are not doing a great job, and I'm certainly not sitting here to defend them. But you're talking a very good game, but, you know, doing it is not so easy.
That's why you see the great policies that we have. When it comes to law and order, we're going to return community policing, a community hub, to all the communities that need it. We're going to prioritise making sure that women and girls aren't just safe in communities, they feel safe in communities. We, for example, on Law and Order, are going to propose a criminal sanction for the criminal exploitation of children. You know, we've posed this to the Tories and they voted against it. This is about adults who are bringing children into criminal enterprise, and there's no specific crime for it. That's just on law and order. On
well,
the
there's
economy,
been lots
we're
of,
tax
well,
fairly,
there's been
spend
lots of
wisely.
Cities.
We're going to make sure that we...
Forgive me, Peter, just to interrupt you. There's been lots of cities in this country where children have been sexually exploited for years and years and years, and Labour administrations in those local areas did nothing about them. You can also talk to Sadiq Khan about the levels of crime in London. He's a Labour mayor. He's done nothing to bring those levels of crime down. Crime is at its height and is worse than ever in London. Will somebody tell him what your policies are?
And it's precisely because we are in the 2020s facing forward. The election's going to be in 2024. And you see, when it comes to crime, Yvette Cooper... making sure that we're having policies that meet the challenges that we have of crime today going forward, which is why we're ahead in the polls on crime. The country is increasingly turning to Labour for the solutions of the big challenges. Now, we can talk to individual failures in different parts of the country. But
well, where Labour are in charge... It's not individual failures, Peter. Andy Burnham in Manchester... Andy Burnham in Manchester...
The violent crime is rising. The violent crime has risen by 18%. Convictions for violent crime has fallen by 18%. Sadiq Khan and mayors and regional mayors don't run the court system, so why are convictions falling? Why is there...
Well, because the police are in special measures in Manchester.
Waiting for their date in court. Our criminal justice system is not being well run. The Labour Party will make sure that criminals actually go before court and victims get their day in court right now.
Okay.
One quarter of all trials are failing because victims aren't even... able to wait 2 years to get their day in court.
We've got to run, Peter. Let me get the Northern Ireland question into you just before we do. I appreciate your time. You say you would call a border poll if you were in power.
No, what I say is that we will stick to the letter and spirit of the Good Friday Agreement. The Good Friday Agreement says that if there is a majority view in Northern Ireland for reunification, the law says that the Secretary of State has to organise a border poll. All I have said is if those circumstances emerge, and right now that's not the case, if those circumstances emerge, I will revert to the Good Friday Agreement and I will implement the law as it stands. This has been the case ever since the Good Friday Agreement was signed. This is the case of Tory policy as well as Labour policy. But if those circumstances emerge, I will revert to the Good Friday Agreement, but I won't resile from sticking to the letter of the law. That's
okay.
All I've said.
Peter Carr, thank you very much indeed. This is Talk TV.
See it, hear it, think it. Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. We have lots to do, ladies and gentlemen. We've got plenty of time to do it, and you'll be glad to know. Peter Kyle spoke to me just before the news there from the Labour Party, saying they were going to be the party of law and order. Oh, really? I think a lot of people would express some surprise about that, given what's going on in London under Sadiq Khan's watch, who happens to be from the Labour Party, and also Andy Burnham up in Manchester, where the police force is under special measures. So much for crime and law and order under Labour administrations. I think it's going to be a bit rich for them to say they're going to teach the Tories about law and order. But anyway, we'll come back to that. Keir Starmer speaking later on. Laura Dodsworth is here this morning. We're going to talk about a great many things, including what went on in Italy and the reaction in the European Union, which is fascinating. We're also going to talk as well, of course, about Mr Trudeau, who's been at it again, trying to control people, and much more besides. Mortgage mayhem is what the headlines are saying. If you've got a mortgage, it's probably going to go up, unless it's a fixed rate mortgage, in which case it's not going to go up until you have to refix the rate. But an awful lot of banks and mortgage companies are now panicking and saying they're not going to lend any money anymore because the markets are too unstable. Absolutely ridiculous behaviour from the banks. As usual, when we need the banks to help people out, they get it completely and utterly wrong and become sort of like the porcupine that goes in on itself and you can't see it anymore. Laura Dodsworth is here. Very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Mortgage mayhem affecting you?
Well, I'm not going to talk about my own personal finances, but one thing I will say about the banks is that I think what the Conservatives have done is deliver a fairly sound, long-term economic policy, and the banks are overreacting like hysterical toddlers.
Yes.
And we shouldn't all be discussing this in a hysterical way daily basis.
No.
This is a long-term economic plan to get us out of recession. And they shouldn't be reacting by putting interest rates up too high now. They should have edged up interest rates earlier. To put it up high now will just penalise millions of people, and that would be wrong.
Well, they were kept artificially low, in my view, for far too long. The Bank of England got that wrong. But also, the Labour Party are responsible for stoking this kind of hysteria, as are a lot of people in the media, because they don't understand the markets. And I've been saying this now for 3 days, basically, that here's the situation. The dollar is very strong. Every currency is dropping against the dollar, including the euro, which went down below parity, by the way. And nobody said anything. You know, where have you seen the story about the euro dropping below parity? It's all about the pound. Where have you seen the stories about the Japanese yen falling so low that the Japanese central bank intervened and put their interest rates up last week? Nobody's talking about that. They're only talking about how Liz Truss has ruined the pound.
Yeah,
it's rubbish.
It's anti-British, it's anti-conservative, it's anti-long-term, it's hysterical. I don't even want to get drawn into talking about it.
No.
I just wish that we could have a sensible economic policy, stick to it.
Well done. What would you like to talk about?
Well, gosh, we've got lots of things we said we'd talk about
today. Well, now you're on the spot. Now you have to pick one.
Last week on Plank of the Week, I made Justin Trudeau the Plank
of
the Week.
You did, and that was very popular in Canada. There was loads of people, like a couple of hundred thousand people in Canada thought that was a great idea.
Millions of people, actually.
Was it?
Yeah, I told you, Mike, I was doing it for Canada. At the time I made him Plank of the Week, there were 500,000 tweets saying Trudeau must go. Mm. By the end of that day, I think there were 2 million.
Right.
The Canadians have had it with him. And there's another example. He was on telly yesterday saying, travel restrictions are ending. People got to make personal choices, just like Jacinda Ardern has done in New Zealand. They're the most inauthentic, revolting political leaders imaginable.
Yeah.
But he's saying, it's your choice now, but you better get it done. Right. If you don't get vaccinated, maybe the mandates will come back. It's kind of comply or we're going to bully you again.
He loves it, doesn't he? I think we've got
evidence.
The clip.
There's not even, a clip.
Shall we have the clip? And then we can see it from his own lips. Here's Trudeau.
Every step of the way, we make decisions based on what experts, what doctors, what public health authorities recommend us to do. There is the sense that these border measures were no longer effective or no longer justified in the circumstance that we're in right now. We know that we are seeing a slight uptick in cases in certain places, so we're going to have to be careful and monitor carefully. But at the same time, to remind Canadians, we stepped up during this pandemic as individuals, as communities, to get vaccinated quicker and to higher levels than just about any other country in the world. And because of that, studies have shown that we avoided hundreds of thousands of deaths because of the decisions that municipalities, that provinces, the federal governments took during this pandemic that kept people safe. And right now, the best thing each of us can do to prevent a resurgence of COVID-19 as winter approaches is to make sure that you get up to date in your vaccinations with the new formulations coming out that'll keep us even safer. And that'll mean that we won't need to take further steps, hopefully, if everyone gets vaccinated.
Goodness me.
Oh, my goodness, Mike. I mean, I feel my blood pressure rising just watching that. He's such an
idiot. What a load of rubbish.
He's such an idiot. It's unbearable. I mean, as usual, our off-air bits are the best bits. You and I are shaking our heads like angry little toys. Mm. They're rolling our eyes. No, look, I mean, he basically says there's no need to do it. The experts say there's no need to do it. But we want you to do it anyway. And if you don't, I'm kind of subtly threatening I'm going to mandate it. And when he says we stepped up as Canadians, that's not true. He stepped up in his big jackboots and kicked the population into doing what he said they should do. That's why they had the truckers' protests. He's stepped up to being an authoritarian.
He did.
He forced the population into doing what he said they should do, even without the scientific evidence behind it.
This stuff about saving lives, where's that coming from? Who are these hundreds of thousands of deaths that they didn't manage to have because of his great policies?
Well, it will be from terrible modelling with circular, fallacious reasoning. Anyway.
Well, that would be like Neil Ferguson saying, half a million people didn't die. So, we must have got it right. Because this is now, I've worked this out now, because it's taken me quite a while to do so, that these modellers, right, they used to say, well, the thing is, we'll give you this as a possibility, and if it doesn't happen, then that's good, isn't it? Because it means that it wasn't as bad as we thought. No, what they're really doing is saying the reason it's not as bad as we said it was going to be is because of the measures that we took.
Of course.
And you can never prove that.
No, you can never prove it. I just think he's weak. That was an embarrassing speech. And I think what's evident when he's talking is he doesn't believe it and he's a bit embarrassed. Mm. There's this real palpable embarrassment from Ardern and Trudeau at the moment as they're having to say, actually, you've all got freedom of choice again now. We did it. We got through it.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Do you know what that reminded me of? Have you ever seen The Mask, that Jim Carrey film?
Yeah.
He looks like the bad guy. And the mask is now affecting his face, and he's actually going from this kind of, rather pin-up sort of boy to what he really is. And his face is actually changing. I know that might sound a bit weird.
But you know what I mean?
He's now looks more like what he is.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but the embarrassment is certainly clear. And, I think that brings us on to the theme of the things we're talking today, which is about experts and leadership.
Yes.
So, if we start with the experts first, there's a very small study that's just been published in JAMA Network. Now, it's very important to emphasise it's small, but it is published in JAMA Network.
And what is JAMA Network?
Oh, it's a science publication. Right. So It's a new study that has found that traces of the mRNA COVID vaccine have been found in breast milk in the first 48 hours after vaccination. Mm. So I don't want to comment on what that means in terms of safety or efficacy. That's for the experts to do. I can't comment on that. This study does recommend some caution with women who are in the first 6 months of breastfeeding, that maybe for the first 2 days they shouldn't, after having the vaccine, they shouldn't breastfeed. The point I want to make about this is, when I saw this, I thought, well, hang on a minute. I distinctly remember we were told by the experts that this can't happen. Yeah. I thought, I'm going to go back and I'm going to look for this. And yes, the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists said there is no plausible mechanism by which any vaccine ingredient could pass your baby through breast milk. For me, that's a very strong statement to say there's no plausible mechanism and then it's found it has happened.
Yes.
It's quite consistent, I think, with a lot of the
so
experts.
So there must be something that's implausible then, I guess.
Well, I think the problem is that the advice has been implausible. Yeah. We've been given very strong, very bombastic advice about from scientists and experts about what to believe. And then it's been found a bit later on not to be true. And this was covered by Full Facts as well. Mm. And this brings me on to the main thrust of my point, is that Full Facts have censored, corrected and through their fact-checking, encouraged shadow banning on social media for commentary that went against expert advice.
Yes.
And then later on, we find out the expert advice was wrong.
Yeah.
And of course, this is no great surprise, because in science and in a new pandemic, information will evolve.
Mm.
I think what this points to is three things. First of all, the experts can get it wrong, and perhaps instead of coming out with very strong statements, with this absolute sureness that they're right and telling us silly people what to believe, they should have more humility and say, on this matter, there's still uncertainty, but this is what we recommend. I would respect that more. Okay?
I think so, because also what you've got is an organisation set up nebulously, in my view, Full Fact, you know, funded by the same people that run the social networks that we have, basically correcting you on something which isn't true, which they know possibly isn't true. Then I'm not saying they're doing it maliciously, but they're making sure that you can't directly kind of contravene what they believe to be the truth, even though it's not the truth.
Well, I think the error, first of all, lies with the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists saying there was no plausible mechanism when there turned out to be a mechanism.
Right.
You know, give it time. Say it's unknown at this stage.
Yeah.
But what they were trying to do was create a sense of absolute surety in the safety of the vaccines. Then you've got fact checkers who work with the social media companies, who, by the way, fund them, and then get posts and things taken down, censored, shadow banned, or misinformation guidance on them to reduce the readership. And that turns out to be false. So it's really kind of inhibiting the public debate
If I put up a Facebook post about anything in particular, nothing in particular, but it has the word COVID in it, there's already a little message that comes underneath it saying, if you want more information on COVID-19, click here. You know, that's ridiculous to me, isn't it?
I think it is. I think it's babying us. And the second implication, the point I want to make, is this is ultimately going to erode trust in experts, in publications and in the fact checkers, because they keep being proven to be wrong in a time frame that we can all remember. You know, when I saw this study, I was like, hang on, I remember directly contradictory advice just last year.
Yeah.
So I remember it, I look it up. I now feel less trusting of advice in the Royal College of Obstetrician and Gynaecologists.
Well, I think
and the media.
I mean, Sage have been more or less discredited completely by the pandemic, haven't they? I mean, I wouldn't trust Sage to cook me an egg at this point, frankly.
My trust in the experts has definitely been eroded. The third implication, and this is important, is that breastfeeding women are going to need some updated advice really quickly about whether this affects safety or not. It's not for me to comment. I'd have no idea. So That's my comment about the experts. You know, we've got another example of their expertise being bursted a little bit.
We'll hold that thought, because we're just going to stop for a moment and we will return to the experts. And I'll tell you another little story about Neil Ferguson. Laura Dodsworth is here. We've got lots more to do. This is Talk TV.
Talk radio and Talk TV.
Think you know Disney Plus? Think again.
This is not a drill. This is happening.
We've got gripping action like original series The Old Man.
This is not someone to underestimate.
Epic drama like the all-new season of Grey's Anatomy.
This is good.
And iconic exclusives like the brand new season of The Kardashians.
Did you know about this?
Disney Plus is all this and more.
No.
Yes.
Thought you knew Disney Plus? Think again. All this plus more streaming this autumn. 18 plus subscription required. T's and C's apply.
Pay, get paid. Pay, get paid. With Barclaycard, get paid in store. Get paid online. Get paid from Switzerland. Cashflow. Pay suppliers on time, every time. Become their favourite client. Get thank you gift basket of macaroons. Get cash back on business spend. New espresso machine in staff room. Oh, paperwork. Wait, free accounting software. Search Barclaycard payments. The payment part is just the start. Offers now available. The approval of your application depends on financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply. Free accounting software provided by FreshBooks for selected Barclaycard customers only.
With her new iPhone 14 Pro, Izzy can now see every tiny feather on the robin hiding in that holly bush. Amazing! See the world at its most beautiful with the incredible new iPhone 14 Pro. Get it from Vodafone today with the UK's only phone buyback guarantee. And get a guaranteed buyback price when you trade it in.
Selected devices only. Trade-in in good condition from September to October 2023 via our trade-in tool. Airtime and device eligibility checks and terms apply. See vodafone.co.uk/buyback. Credit by Vodafone.
At Lidl, we're big on British. Because all our everyday range of fresh milk, butter and eggs is British. That's as British as a buttery crumpet in a builder's brew and taking forever to hang up the phone.
Bye. Bye. Cheers. Bye, Nan.
Yep, that British. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Exclude special promotions. Subject to availability, selected stores excludes NI.
Your way from driveway to motorway. Talk Radio. Travel update.
Delays top of the M74 towards Glasgow to the M73 where there's a breakdown before Junction 4 in Merrieville. In Heckington, Lincolnshire, the A17 is blocked both ways, dealing with a fire here affecting you on the road between Tyne's Head and Sleaford. The M23, Surrey queues, leaving the M25 towards Gatwick Airport, where there's been an accident. This is across three lanes and trains. No, C2C between Leyden and Shoeburyness. I'm Sarah Elliott.
Some things leave you guessing. Like, why are yawns contagious? But not MailChimp. MailChimp eliminates guesswork from email marketing by analysing data from billions of emails to offer up personalised recommendations for how to improve your email content and targeting. Guess less and sell more with Intuit MailChimp.
News talk.
Business talk.
Unrivaled talk. Daisy McAndrew.
On Talk Radio and Talk TV.
The day's biggest news stories clearly debriefed, expertly debunked and fearlessly debated.
Free Speech Radio. Daisy McAndrew. Tonight from 10.
On Talk Radio and Talk TV. Nationwide. By your side. Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Laura Dodsworth is here. Before we move off Sage and all of that, I just want to say, you probably saw this joke on Twitter about Neil Ferguson and his estimate of the queue for people who were going into Westminster Hall. And basically he estimated that the queue was about 48 miles long, would be filled with something like 5 million people and would take 68 days to get all the way through. And it was just, I love the fact that people now just don't take these people seriously.
I love it.
Neil Ferguson is a joke figure now.
Well, there's a new saying as well, out by Ferguson.
Yeah.
I try and pep a conversation with that. You know, if somebody's got an estimate wildly wrong, you go, oh, you're out by Ferguson. it's got to become common parlance.
Yes,
let's try and use that every week.
Let's do that.
You're out by a Ferguson.
Exactly.
Let's make it a thing, Mike.
Well, somebody who's in is, of course, the new Italian Prime Minister, Ms. Meloni. What do you make of it?
I don't know her policies in detail. So I can't really comment too much on that. I think there's a lot being made of her being far right, whereas in Italy they describe her as centre right.
Yes.
And the bits of the speeches that I've listened to don't sound very far right to me. Actually, I'd like a moratorium on the terms left, right and far right, because these days they're just used as either pejoratives or as signals of moral superiority. You know, people on the left think they're better. I mean, an example would be of, I think we can call it left-wing bias on the BBC.
Katja Adler
described Meloni's win by saying that millions of people didn't vote for her and don't recognise themselves in her nationalist agenda.
Right.
But millions of people did vote for her, more voted than didn't vote. You know, well, that might not be strictly true, but millions voted for it, and they do recognise themselves in her agenda.
Mm.
And I don't think that the BBC would have said the same thing about a left-wing leader winning. They wouldn't have said, oh, millions don't recognise themselves in this leader's identity politics, or millions don't recognise themselves in their pro-Libyan immigration stance. They wouldn't have switched it
around
the other way.
Well, they also don't say that Ursula von der Leyen, as I like to call her, was not voted for by millions of people either. They'd never say that, would they?
This is a really important point, because she said something that was deeply sinister, actually, before Meloni won. She said, so this is the European Commission chief, not democratically voted for, as you say, in Italy, saying, my approach is that whatever democratic government is willing to work with us, we're working together.
Mm.
If things go in a difficult direction, difficult. I've spoken about Hungary and Poland. We have tools.
Mm.
You know, this is, excuse me.
We have ways
me.
Of making you comply.
So let's compare. We've got a leader who has been voted in, has a democratic
elected,
mandate.
We call
elected.
It. Yeah.
Elected. And then we have the leader of a European superstate saying, if we don't like that leader, we have tools.
Mm.
The threat to the sovereignty of the Italian people is Ursula von der Leyen, as
yeah.
you call her.
It's
not
shocking,
the newly elected leader.
No.
It is shocking.
And what's
I
it going to do with her?
Sinister.
And I think that's quite significant. I mean, we were speaking to an expert in Italy yesterday who didn't think that the EU aspect of this was particularly going to cause any problems between Italy and the European Union. But I think in the end, a lot of people have voted for this woman because of the way that the European Union treated them. Don't forget, when COVID broke out in Europe, it broke out in northern Italy because of their connection with the Chinese kind of... garment business, right? And there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing of travel between those two places. And what did Germany do? They shut their border. They didn't let anybody in, you know. So people who were trying to get away from where COVID was spreading faster than wildfire, if you want to put it that way, they just shut the border. There was no European cooperation. They didn't say, oh, yes, come to Germany where we can give you shelter and we can give you succour and we can make sure that you're safe and we can help you to escape this deadly disease. At that time, that's what they all thought. They shut the border.
I mean, I think that Meloni's win is partly based on her stance on immigration.
Yeah.
You've got to remember that in recent years, Italy's had about 750,000 Libyan immigrants.
Yeah.
And the things that she's standing
it's
for will...
It's literally the ground that they hit first, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think a lot of the things she's talking about, while I don't know her policies in detail, it's easy to see they'll resonate with ordinary people.
Mm.
Her speeches have been quite electrifying, actually. And not in that sort of far-right way where
no.
the leaders whip up hysteria
no.
and exploit it. She's resonating deeply with what people want because she's talking about things which these days are considered passé, old-fashioned,
yes.
undesirable, but still speak to people, like religion, family, the individual... She talks about the individual. If right and left are a meaningless paradigm these days because they're just used as insults or to signal superiority, the axis that I think is really important is collectivism versus the individual.
Yes.
Globalism versus populism.
Mm.
And authoritarianism versus liberty.
Yeah.
And to me, Meloni appears to be on the side where she's saying it's okay to be an individual. It's okay to love your nation. And... she's there voted for, democratically elected, and is speaking to what the country wants.
Mm.
I don't understand the almost hysterical flailing against her in this country, the descriptions of her as far right.
Yeah, because it's coming from the people in the media who would do the same against Boris Johnson, who, as we were laughing about this morning with Claire Fox, was described by the same people as this far-right, terrible, awful man, you know, with no morals, and he's going to take us down this terrible road because he hates immigrants. It turned out to be completely reversed. And now, of course, they've got Liz Truss, and they're going, oh, maybe he wasn't as far-right as we thought. And suddenly now we've got somebody far-right. So it's just the Tories that they hate, and anybody on the right. And let's talk about Labour Party, because Keir Starmer speaks today. We had Peter Kyle on, who's a shadow for Northern Ireland, talking about how they're ready to govern and, you know, people like their policies. Well, first of all of those things you've just described are Labour Party policies. And Claire was telling me that they had to hold a secret meeting at Labour Party conference of Labour women. It wasn't publicised. I mean, it wasn't completely secret, obviously, but it wasn't publicised. It wasn't part of the programme because it was Labour women. And Rosie Duffield got up and said, you know, I don't really think we should be championing, a candidate like Eddie Izzard standing
not
as a woman.
Not on an all-women shortlist,
yeah.
certainly.
Right.
It makes a mockery.
For Labour to say they're ready to govern, I don't think the people of this country are ready for that kind of organisation to run the country.
I think it seems to be what the media want. I'm not sure if it is what... I'm not sure if ordinary people would want it if they understood it. I mean, they're committed to net zero by 2030, aren't they?
Yes.
Which would make them the party of blackouts.
Yes.
There's no feasible way to do this.
Mm.
There's very little
no
difference.
No plausible way, even.
No plausible mechanism. There's There is almost, you can't hold a piece of paper between their policies on tax and the Conservatives now, apart from they wouldn't have cut the 45% tax rate, which, however, last time there was a higher rate tax cut in 2014, it generated more tax revenue because it encourages more people to stay here for the whole year and and work and earn money and pay into tax coffers. So there's very little difference between them.
Yeah.
I'm not really that excited about Keir Starmer speaking today.
I'm really not either, but I'm building it up because I know that it will be a disappointment. You know, it's a bit like going, PMQs is coming. I wonder if Keir Starmer will be any better against Liz Truss. And he was actually worse against Liz Truss than he was against Boris Johnson because he didn't know, funnily enough, how to deal with a woman of some intellect who was standing opposite him making statements that he couldn't counter.
Yes.
So, which makes him a rather immature individual, doesn't it?
I actually find him hard to listen to.
Yeah.
Now, I know this is going to sound possibly a little facile, but if I try listening, I find I've tuned out and I have to try and listen again. He's just not that interesting. And I know that shouldn't be the key defining characteristic necessarily of the leader, but just a little element of charisma or listenability. Yeah. Compare him to, say, Maloney.
Yeah.
She's electrifying. Everybody's like hanging on her words. And do you know what it is with her? I think it's authenticity. Yeah. You can just tell when somebody believes what they're saying. Mm. She believes it. Contrast her with, say, Trudeau and Ardern, who look like they're dripping in lies when they talk.
They do. It's horrible. Well, Julie Hartley Brewer made the point yesterday that she was watching the interview that was going on Laura Kunzberg's show, and she said, I watched an interview with Keir Starmer, and after 10 minutes, I realise I haven't listened to anything he's actually said. Then I have to go back to the beginning, and then I do it again, and I still can't listen to any of it. So that's the way it goes. Laura, we've reached the end.
No, again.
Thank
not
you
again.
So much. I know. Thank you. A pleasure as ever.
Me.
We'll see you soon. Laura Dodsworth, lots more to come here. This is Talk TV.
On DAB+, on the app, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. It's a little bit grim outside. I thought I saw some blue sky for a minute. You can see blue sky behind me. That's because there's always blue sky behind me because the people that talk common sense get looked after by the weather gods. If you believe that, you believe anything. But Keir Starmer's going to speak at 2 o'clock. We spoke to John McTiernan, former Tony Blair advisor, who said conference is going really well. It's really boring because he thinks if it's boring, it's good for Labour. But of course, one thing you can guarantee from Keir Starmer is that that will be immensely boring when he gets up to speak for probably half an hour or possibly more. He thinks he wants to be the next Prime Minister. I'm not sure he's going to do that. One thing we are going to do here at Talk TV is Plank of the Week, which is coming up very shortly. We're going to film it this afternoon. James Whale is in the house to do it, and Molly Kingsley is here as well. Molly, a very good afternoon. Welcome.
Good morning.
And so thank you for coming in to do planks. But we thought, since you're here, we might as well get you on the show beforehand to sort of warm you up a bit. Because you've had a bit of an interesting time with PayPal recently with your organisation.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week.
Tell us what happened.
Well, PayPal cancelled us actually at the beginning of the month. This was the start of September, and we just got this email out of the blue into the Us For Them inbox.
Right.
It just said, you know, we don't approve of you, effectively. No explanation.
Right. Was that the wording they used?
No, the wording was that your activities aren't in accordance with our user agreement. So, you know, we look at the user agreement and we think, what on earth have we done? Right. And the user agreement contains various illegal, unlawful, and really quite outrageous activities.
And of course, these are things that you didn't read when you opened
up a PayPal
account.
Who reads that?
You know, it's like when they send you the new Apple update and it go reams and reams and you go, all right, whatever, tick.
No, well, I used to be a lawyer as well.
Did you?
Like, tick, tick.
Right.
So no, we hadn't read it, but we got no meaningful explanation. Obviously, we did what, you know, you'd have expected us to do and sort of say, what the hell? Mm. Because the thing, you know, there were a few £1,000 in, so it wasn't an insignificant amount of money. But the main thing was
you're not really a commercial organisation as such, are you? I mean, you use money for things that you need it for.
Yeah, no, we're not profit making, but we rely on donations from supporters and really crucially recurring donations that we've built up, you know, goodwill over 2 years.
Right.
We have standing orders for small amounts, but they go in every month.
Right.
And we need that because like any company, we're a company.
Yeah.
So we've got overheads. They're small, but, you know, hosting, legal.
Sure.
That kind of stuff, and it just cut all of that off.
And did this come at the same time as the Free Speech Union had the same problem?
Well, we didn't know about that at the time. So we, if anything, I think ours might have been a couple of weeks before, but it was all within a couple of weeks.
Right.
So we stayed quiet because actually, you know, we were a bit embarrassed.
Yeah.
Actually, we thought, oh my God, this is not great.
Yeah, because
PR,
I mean, your organisation, as far as I know, stands up for the rights of children. It stands up for the rights for schools to continue to stay open during COVID, for example, and matters arising from that. I mean, it's hard. hardly revolutionary, burning of effigies or anything, is it?
Well, you kind of wonder, what have we done? And yeah. I mean, let's be honest, we have, each time we have taken on a campaign, it has been quite a controversial position. So we did argue for schools to stay open.
Yeah.
We forget now, because actually now no one admits arguing anything else. But right. at the time, this was May 2020, that was right. a very controversial yeah. position.
Well, let's talk about Keir Starmer. I mean, I remember Keir Starmer standing up in the House of Commons and basically demanding that schools remain closed. Yep. Not only because it was better for the children, but it was also safer for the teachers, who, of course, the union were representing through him.
Well, exactly. And, we got absolutely vilified when we, at the beginning, this was 2 years ago. And it was the same with our, the other campaigns we're known for, campaigning against masks for kids.
Yeah.
And obviously the rollout of the vaccination programme for kids.
Right.
And actually, each of these at the time has been controversial. And something in that, we don't know what, PayPal took issue
right.
with.
And then, so they were looking back historically rather than to what you do now, for example.
No idea, Mike. Right. I mean, you can assume so. And then, of course, when we found out that the same had happened to Free Speech Union and Toby Young's Daily Skeptics,
right.
You think, well, actually, this begins to look like a sort of series of politically
yes.
orchestrated assassinations
yeah.
of voices that PayPal or someone, controlling PayPal, who knows where this is coming from, don't like.
So what happened after you decided to challenge them on it?
Yeah, well, then we went public with it. And actually, at the end of last week, there was an awful lot of media interest in it.
Yeah.
And then again, without any warning, without any explanation, we get an email into the account, 10 o'clock or something like that on Friday night, that just said, oh, you can have your account back, and sorry about the inconvenience.
Well, we've examined the situation and decided that, in fact, you don't breach the rules of engagement.
Well, they didn't even tell us that. So they gave a comment to one of the papers saying that, oh, actually, we've decided they're not guilty of misinformation.
Right.
Great. Thanks,
great.
PayPal. I mean, what is a financial services company doing,
yeah.
deciding who is and isn't guilty of misinformation?
Yeah.
You've got a whole question about, even if you were guilty of misinformation,
yeah.
is it right, if you're acting lawfully,
right.
that you can be deplatformed?
Sure.
So, there's a whole host of issues.
But this
here,
is the thing, they seem to be very quick to do it, don't they? And then suddenly they reverse it, but without any explanation and without any kind of remedy to you. Because, you might have lost money, you might want to sue them.
Yeah.
Any number of things could result.
Well,
from that.
There's reputational damage.
Yes.
Potentially,
yeah.
there's the loss of money. So obviously, the first thing we did when we found out 2.5 weeks ago is told supporters to stop, the donations
yeah.
into PayPal,
right.
because we couldn't get access to the account.
Yeah.
And
have you thought about switching to another sort of provider?
Yeah, we've done that now. Oh, I mean, we'll be closing down the PayPal account.
Yeah.
So we've now got back into the account to take out the money.
Excellent.
And, thank you, PayPal.
Yeah.
But, that'll be it. And of course, we'll close it down. And we stand, it's, really worth pointing out, actually, that they haven't restored any of the other accounts. So, Toby Young's accounts
yeah.
and organisations are still blocked. There's Law or Fiction. There's various other groups who we know of who haven't had
yeah.
their accounts restored. And it's discriminatory and it's arbitrary, and it shows the ability of a private financial services company to really have an impact on our public
yeah.
square. Because if you can't get your cash, then potentially as an organisation,
and they
could
use any arbitrary means to measure whether or not you're being a good boy or a good girl, right? They could go,
yeah.
well, we don't like your views on climate change, so actually we're going to pull the account.
Exactly.
I'm slightly
yeah.
worried. I've got an account with one of the big banks. And they've started on the app giving me, if I wish, my carbon footprint. And I'm like, well, one, I don't really want you telling me what my carbon footprint is, or just making it up. They're effectively making it up. They see what you spend and they reckon that, the amount of money you've spent this month could have charged, something like 58,000 mobile phones or something like that. But I'm like, this is all rubbish and nonsense. And what are you going to do with this information? Why do you need it? And why do I need it?
Well, and I think this is the thing. I think it's actually, we've been very surprised by the reaction that this has had, particularly
yeah.
given the sum of money was relatively small. But
right.
actually, I think it's really struck a nerve, because it's been an insight, hasn't it, Mike?
Absolutely.
Exactly. And so, we've talked a lot about sort of this crazy social credit system in China and, it
yeah,
never
yeah.
happened here. Well, it's here.
Yeah.
This is what it would look like.
Right.
And I think that shocked a lot of people. And I think it's a good thing, ultimately, because, there's obviously been an awful lot of political support
yeah.
for the Free Speech Union, yes. for us, for them, and for the, you know, sort of rallying call. For
and I'm sure the Free Speech Union will get there in the end. I think it's just becoming difficult because of the way that, you know, I mean, your profile is relatively low compared to Toby Young's, so they're probably going after him because they don't like the look of him. But, you know, it is ridiculous. But luckily, there are still plenty of people here who actually do understand what free speech is and what free enterprise is as well, because otherwise we'd be in a very bad place.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think, you know, we still call ourselves a liberal democracy, and actually free speech is a critical pillar of that. So I think, if anything, we may come out of this stronger, because I suspect, it, you know, it looks like new laws will be passed to block companies like PayPal being able to do this.
Right. Well, I won't be surprised if you nominate them for Plank of the Week then.
wouldn't want to give anything away.
Don't give anything away, but we will be filming that directly after the show today with James Whale and Molly Kingsley. Molly, thank you very much indeed. We've just got a little bit more to do, and I might sneak James Whale in for a little chat beforehand without wishing to queer the pitch, if you know what I mean. This is Talk TV.
Talk Radio. Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.